It's the Hulkcast and Aston Villa podcast. I'm James Rushton, joined by Danny Raza. We're here to catch up with a lot of Aston Villa news that's happened. Well, since we took a break, pre-season's only just started. There wasn't much to speak about, Danny. We've come back, we're feeling refreshed, and thank God, because there is quite a lot to go through, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well, mate. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. I'm especially excited about today's news. I think it's worth saying our Twitter handles, mine's JMO Rushton, JMO Rushton. Yours is Raza Giorno. And we've got to talk about a hashtag, mate. It's announced Mings. The deal's done.
Yeah. People were panicking for ages, weren't they? People were panicking about whether or not he'd come back to Villa. And people just were, as I said before on the last podcast, people have just been bored. Last few weeks have been a bit quiet. We got target, obviously, at some point during those last few weeks. I don't know when, I couldn't tell you the day. people have been a bit concerned that Villa haven't been sorting out their defence, haven't been sorting out, you know, the missing links inside the squad. And look, we got our man. We got the big one. And Tyrone Mings is the big one. Obviously, all sorts of fees being quoted in terms of add-ons and stuff. Hot Bournemouth, as was reported, supposedly had been playing hardball with him. But I think the minimum that we spent on him is something around the region of £20 million, which when you consider how important he was to us going up next season, I think it almost pays for itself.
Yeah, it's a big fee in isolation, but when you remember kind of how important Tyrone Mings is, it doesn't seem to hurt that much. And hey, I woke up to this morning and I kind of had a browse through Bournemouth's previous transfers, their incomings, and they spent £16 million on Jordan Ibe and a further £19 million on Dominic Solanke, who scored one whole goal in the Premier League. One hole, just one. It wasn't even for Bournemouth, it was for Liverpool a few years ago. Tyrone Mings for £20 million, it's a good deal. It's a good deal. It will eventually go up to £26.5 million. We've read, if all things go well, like Villa stay up, Villa make certain competitions, Tyrone Mings gets into the England squad. But if that does happen, it means he's worth every penny. It means, you know, we're in a good place.
Yeah, exactly. So for those add-ons to really sort of reach that sort of height, we will have the gamble would have basically paid off, essentially. And it is a massive gamble because he's a player that has had a history of injuries. I mean, there is all the chance that he could get, you know, he could obviously fingers crossed, but there is all the chance that he could get injured at some point during the season and we're left to struggle with backups. But, you know, I mean, that's why Villa are moving quick in the market, and that's why we are the big spenders in the Premier League so far. I mean, it's all relative. A lot of the figures have been inflated, but when you look at it, we're the newly promoted club and we're spending ridiculous money. We're the big spenders.
Yeah, I'm kind of enjoying it. I mean, that information comes from the Sky Sports graphic, I believe, and that did include the add-ons. From my calculations, I'm really, really bad at math, so I'll need to be corrected there. But I do believe it includes all those add-ons, all those little bargaining chips that we use to kind of get that initial fee down. But even then, it's quite a stark reality of the investment needed to make Aston Villa a Premier League side. And even without Mings, you look at the squad and it's bare bones. It really is. You've got one first choice striker and it's a guy we've literally just signed. You've got Tyrone Mings going straight in that centre back rotation between James Chester and whoever else is there available, Courtney Horse, Frederick Wilbur. You haven't got that much options across the team, so Villa will still need to invest. Thankfully, we also brought in Matt Target. But going back to Tyrone Mings, did you think that deal was going to get done? Because I had my doubts, to be fair.
I think the honest answer is I didn't know. But from what I've seen so far, if Villa have wanted a player and wanted him really bad, they've been prepared to pay the money for him. We spent a lot of money on Matt Target. We spent a lot of money on Wesley Moraes. If the spending that has happened so far is anything to go by, and the sort of quotes and the types of bids that we've made for players like Jack Butland, supposedly, I think if we really want a player and we're having to spend a lot of money on him, I think the way that Villa are going about this is they have very, very specific targets and they will pay what they want or pay what they can for these players, basically. So I think with Mings, again, look, it was very quiet Nothing was being said. There was a lot of conspiracy theories going around. People were, it's kind of sad, really. Some people were like sort of drawing comparisons to where he was staying in comparison to John Terry and Dean Smith whilst they were on holiday. Mm. There was a lot of that going on. A lot of talk, really. But as soon as Villa made the bid, I had a feeling we were going to get him. What about you?
I don't know. I always thought it's a possibility. It's a major possibility. But, and this is odd, but I thought the announced Ming stuff, you know, how everyone was saying it constantly. And in isolation, each hashtag announced Mings is a joke. I mean, I'm probably going to use that as the head title, you know, the title for this episode of the podcast. But in isolation, each was a funny joke. But you've got to remember that there's thousands and thousands of people saying this to him constantly on everything, and Aston Villa as well. And it was just a bit, you know, if Tyrone Mings doesn't come, and there's every reality that he might not have because of the fee, because of personal terms, there's all these stuff that all these things that have to be considered. It's not a simple thing moving a player from one football club to another. It's really, really difficult to pull off. So I thought, look, if this doesn't happen, how many people have assumed this is happening? And how do they deal with those feelings after?
Yeah, and especially nowadays as well, like you got to remember that Bournemouth obviously spend a lot of money themselves, and they're obviously going through some sort of difficulty. Well, not necessarily right now, but they've been through some sort of difficulty, haven't they? And I mean, they've got their own finances to look after, and if that means holding a guy like Tyrone Mings back so that they can get the absolute best for him, then you know that's fair enough. I haven't got a problem with that. But as you say, yeah, I mean, it was. I would have been annoyed if I was Tyrone Mings. But look, he's a professional footballer. Social media isn't necessarily the recommended thing, but you know what comes with it. And obsessive fans will come for it, especially a good looking lad like him.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the deal means a lot to us. Of course, this announced Mings stuff doesn't happen if Tyrone Mings doesn't mean, you know, a lot to us. And I'm sitting here almost trying not to piss myself to death, thinking, oh my God, we've actually got Tyrone Mings. He's a Villa player. He's a player who entered in only 18 games, entered this really strange mythical status for us. You know what I mean? He was a really special player.
And oh, yeah.
No one else can know that. Other clubs look and they go, oh, they've spent how much on Tyrone Mings? But Tyrone Mings, last season, I wouldn't have put a price on him. It was worth so much. And I think, I wish Villa had inserted some kind of clause in that deal with Bournemouth, because it really has come to bite them. And whatever Bournemouth were asking then certainly wouldn't be 20 million rising to 26.5 million now. It would have been about 10.
I'm really surprised we didn't. I don't understand how that deal went through without us. But maybe it was a case of us just really rushing to get the deal done. Maybe Bournemouth weren't that into the deal. I don't know.
Maybe Villa didn't want to risk any obligation if Tyrone Mings was a crock.
It wouldn't be an obligation.
It's just come off two injury problems. Well, you know, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. I'm trying to explain something that doesn't seem to make any sense, but I guess that's just how the cookie crumbled, really, and we're left with the only thing we can do is bite the bullet. That's honestly the only thing we could have done is bite that bullet and eat that fee.
From Bournemouth's perspective, they've got a very talented English player who obviously had a lot of talent when he moved there and showed a lot of potential for them. So if he was to come down to the Championship and do ridiculously well, why would they sell him on the cheap? I mean, and if it came to it and he wasn't that good, they could probably get some money out of him anyway.
I see the thinking there, but even then, they'd have probably only asked for like 15 million.
Yeah, so coming very close to that 20 million figure, though, aren't we?
Yeah, but 15 million rising to 20 isn't 20 rising to 26. It's still so much cheaper, and I'm thinking the business was there to be done.
Listen, if you're sat in that negotiation chair, right, putting up a 15 million pound offer like that, right, think about it. What are the chances that he was going to turn out to be a 15 million pound player at the end of the season? If at that point he just turned out to be a pretty decent player that we could have had in the squad, and the option to buy is at 15 million, you can no longer buy him when you think about it. Do you know what I mean? If he was just an okay player, if he was a Courtney House standard of player, but we still wanted to buy him, would basically be obliged to pay that 15 million pound. I don't think anybody could have predicted he was going to be this good.
It's even Bournemouth, really, because they signed Chris Meepham to take that kind of centre-back spot. Not that Tyrone Mings owned it at Bournemouth anyway, but they brought a new centre-back in, Chris Meepham from Brentford, and they kind of had a good centre-back there already, so clearly they didn't even know what they had on them, because Tyrone Mings barely saw any action for him. Not really. He saw, you know, from what I can remember, I can only really remember Tyrone Mings as an Aston Villa player, to be honest, right now. But he didn't really see that much action for him. So it's a really strange one, how we've how it's all happened and why we've paid so much. But Tyrone Mings, all of a sudden, this is play with so much meaning to Villa fans, and 20 million almost seems cheap when you consider those emotions. And no one else is going to understand that. You can't put that those feelings out there for anyone to relate to at all. It's not going to make sense.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, this is going to go one of two ways now. I mean, we've spent a lot of money. I mean, we were having a go at Fulham last season for spending way too much money. They spent £100 million. We're heading that way. We're probably going to end up spending more than they did. And whilst we're assembling a good first-team squad here, a lot of it is born off potential. And honestly, even with the big man Mings here, who I'm delighted to have back at the club, by the way, right, and it hasn't really sunk in, but I'm delighted to have him back in the club. Even with him there, unless we get the backups right, and unless we start filling out that squad, it's all going to be worth nothing, because we could very easily go down if a couple of injuries happen.
Yeah, Villa really need to fill out that squad depth, because I've drawn it out a few times, and no matter which way you look at it, Villa's squad depth is extremely weak. And I think the amount of squad churn we have is something like 63% of our players are continuing from last season onto this season. Ignoring Mings, ignoring Twanzebe, it's the players who are still there. So we've boosted that a bit by getting Mings back. It's still going to be like 70%. The rest of the Premier League is about 90%. They've kept everyone. Mm-hmm. They've got their same players from last season. So it's Villa who faced the biggest task in terms of squad churn and transition in terms of squad players and new players coming in. So it's a big ask. And everyone refers to Fulham, doing a Fulham. It's not, I don't believe in that. You have to spend what you have to spend, and Villa have to spend a lot of money because they need to build and construct an entire team. Fulham had their problems. They probably bought the wrong type of players. They bought players that probably didn't gel. They probably didn't give the manager enough time, to be honest. There's a lot of factors in this that don't really apply to Aston Villa. But, you're going to look at Villa probably spending close to 200 million. We're already at 60-odd now.
200 million? I'm not sure about that. I can't see that.
We're at 60 now, mate. So you need a new goalkeeper, a defensive midfielder, another striker, another centre-back. Maybe another attacking midfielder. Definitely another winger. This is going to cost you.
No, I think you can fill it out for another 50 million.
Let's go to a rumour, for example. Adam Webster, 30 million from Bristol City, centre-back, ball player. A really highly rated. He will cost Aston Villa 25 to 30 million, so you'd expect Villa to fill out their squad for another 20 million if we were to buy him, for example.
Leave him, get Hagazi.
Hagazi's still 10.
Yeah, but 30 million for Adam Webster? No thanks. I mean, that's a silly spending at that point. You know, he's a good player, but again, you know, you're looking at paying ridiculous amount of money for, what is he, a 30-year-old?
He's not 30, he's like 23.
Oh, is he? Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, he's 24. He's 24, sorry. Fair enough.
He's fairly young. He looks 30.
Yeah, no.
He does look the age you've said. I will dig you out there.
Yeah, I mean, I've not really looked into it too much because, like,
I will be honest. I thought he was Nathan Baker in photos, you know, on Getty Images. I didn't know that Adam Webster existed. I thought Nathan Baker was playing that good when I watched him. I genuinely thought, and I will admit to this right now, that I thought Adam Webster was Nathan Baker. And I've deleted most of my tweets. I kind of refresh my timeline. You got to do that with social media. You got to have a cleanse, haven't you? You got to have a cleanse, a nice cleanse, detox. Yeah. And I genuinely tweeted so many times how good Nathan Baker seems to be getting on.
Are you serious?
No, I am serious. And it turns out it was Adam Webster.
Webster and Baker have been like a partnership, haven't they? They've played together, right?
I really hope so, because I'm starting to believe now that I have not even seen Nathan Baker at all. And it's just been Adam Webster this whole time.
Either way, I don't think it's worth spending that kind of money for a championship centre-back. I mean, that sounds kind of hypocritical, having just spent that kind of money on Tyrone Mings.
30 million on a championship centre back. But yeah, I know you are right. And look, when it adds up with Calvin Phillips, who's going to cost upwards of 25 million, Jack Butland, who again, upwards of 25 million, that's your budget gone on three players.
The thing is, with this transfer market, Villa and Dean Smith should be looking at it and kind of going, who's high priority and who could we sort of replace on that list with other foreign players? We can't just pick and choose. Like, no team goes through, you know, a transfer market picking and choosing players who aren't for sale. We can't do that. Like, it's just unaffordable. We need to be looking elsewhere. We need to be looking abroad. Really. I mean, we've had links to players like Santa Maria, for example, right?
Yeah. Wrong EA. Stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Why not go abroad for him?
Marvelous Nakamba, of course.
Marvelous Nakamba. Had a watch of him at AFCON. He's looked good. You know, another one at AFCON as well, Trezeguet.
Trezeguet, yeah. He's always been in my mind for so... I watched AFCON a few years ago. Of course, the World Cup this year, AFCON this year, the African Cup of Nations. Trezeguet has always stood out to me, and it's not because he's any good of a footballer. And he's all right. He likes to take on people. He's confident. He's exactly what you'd want from a rotation left winger. It's just his name, Trezeguet. Is he named after David Trezeguet?
I think he just calls himself Trezeguet. It's not his real name. His real name is Mahmoud Hassan.
Why does he call himself Trezeguet then? It is a cool name.
Right, let's find this out. Right.
No, he is. It does derive from David Trezeguet.
Okay, yeah, it has derived from it. Right, so he was given the nickname Trezeguet at age 9 by a youth coach in his school team due to his goal-scoring record for the team and resemblance to French international footballer David Trezeguet. So
he's coach for this guy looks like David Trezeguet at age 9.
You're not doing too well at that point, are you? Do you know what I mean?
That's like fantastic. I hope he looks like David Trezeguet, then no, it's over. He looks nothing like David Trezeguet. He actually looks nothing like him.
No, you're right. He doesn't, does he?
Not anymore. No, he's 5'11". He's Egyptian. There's no relation to France at all. He's Kafir El Sheikh, he was born. That's not where David Trezeguet was born. He started his career at Al Ahly. That's not where David Trezeguet played his football.
So, James, say that again.
Al Ahly.
Al Ahly.
Al Ahly. How do you. You tell me.
Al Ahly. Just call it Al Ahly.
Al Ahly?
Yeah, or Al Ahly.
That's what I said.
You said Al Ahly. Like with the
That's CK. What you just said. Are you having me on here?
I call it Al Ahly.
That's what I said.
All right, James. Whatever you say.
Okay, I'm not saying it again. But Trezeguet played there. I'm really struggling to see the resemblance here. The goal scoring record isn't even that good, mate. So I'm really struggling to see through the eyes of Trezeguet's youth coach at age 9.
Well, he is a left midfielder.
Yeah, the goal scoring record's not there though, is it? It's not David Trezeguet numbers.
To be fair, as a winger, as a wide midfielder, you scored 9 goals for Kasımpaşa in 29 appearances, and he scored 6 for Egypt as well, which again for a winger is pretty good. The thing with the way that Egypt play is that they do rely pretty heavily on him and Mohamed Salah. Rather than the striker necessarily, Egypt don't really have goal scoring strikers when you look at their record and we look at the way that they play, and he is very, very important to that team. I've always liked him. I think more so since the World Cup last year, I thought he looked pretty good. But his dribbling is on point. He runs at players. He's exactly the kind of player that's going to work well for Dean Smith. I think he'd be a very good option for us. And I think that would basically complete our wingers. The only problem there is, again, we look very left heavy.
Yeah, and you'd be taking this guy surely over Saeed Benrahma, which is just Benrahma's really good, and Trezeguet is just good. Benrahma's the real deal. And I'm not saying Trezeguet might not be the real deal. You know, we need to see him at Villa. We need to have that direct comparison. But sorry, Benrahma's just class.
No, look, Benrahma's great. right? He's played very well in the Championship, and obviously, even for Algeria, he's only made a couple of appearances for them. But you know, we don't know necessarily Benrahma would cut it in the Premier League, right? Like,
yeah,
it's the same with Trezeguet. We don't know necessarily if he's going to cut it in the Premier League as well as he did in the Championship. Trezeguet's shown potential elsewhere. He's shown potential in Turkey. So why not bring him in? You know, why pay all that extra money for Benrahma, who again is a question. It's a massive question mark. I think we've got Trezeguet, who's been performing well on the international scene. He's only 24 years old. If we can get him for about about 10 million, then I'd take that over 30 million Benrahma. At this point, we've got to start thinking about budget. We can't just start spending on whoever we want willy-nilly.
Well, looking through Trezeguet's, looking through the news articles linked to him, he's been linked to moves all over the shop for the last 6-odd years.
I'm not surprised.
Nottingham Forest, Celtic, Anderlecht, of course, he moved to eventually. Even Inter Milan, Galatasaray, Slavia Prague. There's a lot of big clubs. So this guy's agent is working overtime. He's getting linked to those big moves constantly. So it does look like Villa, because Villa are at the stadium, right? This is a definite link. Villa are at the stadium when Egypt played South Africa and fell apart and lost.
Oh, maybe they're just giving Ahmed El Mohamedi some support.
you'd like to think so, but they could well be looking at not just one of his teammates, but two, because we're not just linked to Trezeguet, mate, but Hegazi, of course, he plays for West Brom, and he's a bit of a decent centre-back, isn't he? I think a lot of Villa fans have said, oh, we won't have him because he's a West Brom player. But whenever I've seen him, he oozes that kind of James Chester-like class. He can play that high line. He's like Tyron Mings as well. He's like a little bit of... he's not as good as either of them, but he's got that little bit of mix between them. He's good in the air, can play the high line, can use his feet. He's well liked at West Brom, and we'll be taking that for, what, 10, 12 million? He's a really good player.
I don't know where this myth has come from that he can't play the ball. This myth that Ahmed Hegazi is, you know, some sort of lumbering giant that can't play football. I don't know where this has come from. It's baseless. I mean, against us, I thought he carried the ball out pretty well. I guess maybe you can talk about some of the defensive errors that have happened for West Brom, but generally they defend really well as a unit. And the only reason any of these errors ever happen is because all they do is defend.
Well, every single centre-back is prone to errors. James Chester and Tyron Mings have made a few.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I really like Hegazi. I always think that... I mean, I thought particularly in the playoff games against us, I thought he was their best player.
And that's when they were crap.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Look, he's big, right? He's powering, right? He's only 28. He's not as old as some people probably think he is. I think it'd be a very good option for us. I think he could start for us as well. But I think generally where you'd see him play is in that position. The same position, the same centre back position, left sided centre back, where Tyron Mings will be first choice, but absolutely he's a fantastic option. And you can probably link up pretty well with El Mohamedi as well. There's some good chemistry going.
Mate, if you get Trezeguet, Ahmed Hegazi, and El Mohamedi in that same team, you got a bit of Egypt there, haven't you?
You got a bit of a pyramid there, mate.
Can you say that? It was good anyway, but. Hegazi, a lot of people criticising him, and I can't see it myself. I think they've seen three games of him and just decided, no. This is the guy who's been playing at the highest level, whether it be for Egypt or West Brom. You know, he's been playing Premier League football. He's been playing in World Cups, Cup of Nations, Under-20 World Cups, Olympics. He's been all over the place. So the pedigree's there. I'd have him. Yeah, 10 million, 10, 12 million. It's again, a no-brainer. It seems so simple, especially if you're looking at Webster's class, right? Adam Webster's class, even though I thought he was Nathan Baker. But Hegazi comes in.
And I
cheaper. It's cheaper. You can make that deal. It's a cross-city deal. The connections are there. Make it happen. I'm really down for Ahmed Hegazi.
I really want Hegazi and Hotter to be our best players next season, just so I can see the salt in our fans who have mindlessly just been hating on him for no reason. whatsoever.
Well, that's what they do come from the, you know, West Brom and Birmingham.
I don't care if we're taking their best players, then yeah, that's a good thing.
They're really good players as well. Hotter ripped us apart. I know we've mentioned it before, but Hotter's ripped us apart, and Higazi can play across that those centre back positions, left and right, right footed, of course. But he adds that nice bit of balance, mate. I'm really down for it again, as I said.
I think the point is you don't need to be paying 20 to 30 million for every single position that's left for us to fill.
Absolutely not. No, I don't think so. Matt Target was a cheap example. What was that? 11 million rising to 17 if everything goes well. Left back, exactly what we needed. Some competition for Neil Taylor. Steady. Look, he has that early cross like Almo as well. And that Almo early cross that brought us to the Premier League. Mm-hmm. So Matt Target, there's a lot to like. If you like Almo, Matt Target could be that little bit better on the left-hand side.
Another one that ripped us to shreds.
Yeah. Fulham. We saw him enough. We saw him in person. I've seen him in person twice, and I didn't like it. Not, I didn't like it happening to me.
He didn't get much of a chance at Southampton last season.
No, not as well. You're playing with Ryan Bertrand, so you've really got a kick on. He's one of the more decent left-sided defenders, isn't he? But Matt Target, 11 million. There's a lot to like there, mate.
Yeah, I'd take it. Again, was the best left-back in the Championship 2 seasons ago. Like, the best. He'll bring assists. I'd like to think he'll bring goals as well. I think what we're seeing, which I'm really, really impressed with, actually, all the signings, when you look at them so far, very technically skilled players. Like, players, you know, players who haven't made their name out of being big and powerful and, you know, basically brick houses. Every single signing that we're making so far is a very technical player. Target is like that. You know, these are the kinds of players that I remember when I was a kid. I really enjoyed like the links to guys like Ryan Taylor. In fact, sorry, guys like Matty Taylor, who like would just like score goals from 30 yards while playing at left back. You know, you'd like watching the guys like Cicinho or Roberto Carlos and that kind of thing. Players who obviously we weren't linked to. And I think, you know, those are the kind of fullbacks which are really exciting to me. And I think Matt Target has the potential to do really well for us. El Mohamedi's been exciting me in the African Cup of Nations. You know, he's still been popping in with goals, which is crazy. Potentially next season, if we've got Target and El Mohamedi on either side, there's going to be teams who are going to be struggling to hold us off, because we're gonna have serious overlapping fullback power.
So exactly what you want to see. Some attacking fullbacks, Wilbur, El Mohamedi, Matt Target, and I mean Neil Taylor, even though he doesn't put the ball in the air at all, hates a cross, still an attacking fullback. Just need to see a bit more from him. But Matt Target putting the ball in the air, hopefully off the head of Wesley Moraes, who is a confirmed signing. Again, we've already spoke at length about that, but that is Villa's current record deal. Tyrone Mings may eventually surpass that. But Wesley, right now, the initial fee of 22 million. I'm really happy. He's got a lot to prove, but he's that initial interview, he really wants to prove it. He wants to make it known that he's a record signing.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to see him play. I wonder if he's going to be as good as we think he is, or as good as his fee commands. But the funny thing is, he's a totally unknown quantity, isn't he? Like, to everybody.
Basically. Yeah, I mean, StatsBomb put out the player radar, as they do, demonstrating his qualities or lack of them. And they were really worried, but it's very obvious with context why Wesley is a Villa player. And that's because he's dangerous in the air and absolutely loves to get on the end of a cross. You buy Matt Target, you've got Almo, Wilbert, you've got players who will put in crosses, El Ghazi, Hotter, players who will play the ball in. And now you've got Wesley, who will get in those good positions. He'll get in those positions of damage. He'll do damage him on the end of a Matt Target cross.
I mean, at the very least, he'll end up like a Salomon Rondon, right? Like, you'd hope. He's got the same sort of size, isn't he?
Yeah, bringing players in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you got El Ghazi, Hotter, Grealish, of course, Jack Grealish. We forget the players we already have that he can bring into play very easily with a short pass.
Last striker we had that big, right? And I'm going to ignore Rudy Gastede. Was John Carew, and I've you know, you can really see Wesley Moraes go on and be as big a success as him. He was the guy that He was probably my favourite striker growing up anyway. And I could see him.
What about Benteke?
Oh, gosh, there was Benteke as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, but I'll go with Kourou. It was a big favourite.
I think Benteke was something different.
Yeah, he could do some magic, couldn't he? That goal against Manchester United, it was just, woof. That little curling chip almost. He found that little tiny gap to get the ball through, and Benteke was always like that. The technical brilliance that probably wasn't greatly appreciated. I mean, John Kourou probably didn't have that. Hopefully Wesley's got a bit of both about him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that the work permit went through. It's nice to see another South American face at Villa. I'm glad. It's been a while. So it's great to have that again. Because, I mean, potentially, if he goes on and does well, you never know. Maybe we'll be seeing him play in the Copa America next year.
But he hasn't been capped yet. But, I mean, Premier League football gets new eyes on you, don't it? Those scouts, those international scouts. He's got everything to play for. He's got that big record fee to play for. And he wants to get playing into that international team. That's the next step for him, I guess.
Look, if he comes in and scores, what, 10 goals in the first sort of 3 or 4 months he's here, then he'll get picked for sure. I don't think Brazil are incredibly difficult to break into at the moment.
He's got a chance.
Yeah.
He'll have to start scoring though, because he's not been picked so far. He'll have to really start kicking on and getting noticed. So the platform's there, Wesley. You do it. Speaking of internationals, Jack Butland was a player we've been linked with for most of the window, but it looks like that deal is dead. They've still got irons in the fire. Tom Heaton is a name they're linked with now, and it looks like they're putting in a bid today that was rejected because it was a bit of a lowball bid. Villa are putting lowball bids in left, right and centre. The one for Tom Heaton rejected. He's valued about 5 to 7 million, so Villa probably put in £4 for him. £5. So, fine. Yeah, Burnley rejected it. Tom Heaton's a class keeper, though.
Burnley, by the way, pulled off a proper good signing in Jay Rodriguez for about £5 million. That's one I really would have wanted. That was one of my
That's really cheap.
Yeah, I'm jealous of that one. I'm not going to lie. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Heaton, one of their like 4 or 5 goalkeepers. If we want him, we'll get him.
How much first choice, how many first choice goalkeepers do Burnley have? Because they got Joe Hart, Nick Pope, Tom Heaton. They must have a few more.
Let's have a look.
That's still too many.
I'm going to have a look at the Burnley squad.
You have Joe Hart, former England international, the big bright hope of the future back in when the future was 2009. You've got Nick Pope, now the big bright future of England, and he must be about 27. He's not young. Tom Heaton, once the big bright hope of Manchester United, and he's a class keeper. He was the keeper they had when they came up, and I remember him saving everything. Still a quality keeper. There's not that much difference between him and Jack Butland, except age.
I think the thing with Butland is, like, I feel bad for him. Because if Stoke are like refusing to sell for that kind of money, they're basically forcing an England standard player to play in the Championship, which is awful. Because what will end up happening is he'll just end up leaving on a free, which is, you know, not good for anybody. Although I don't know. Maybe Butland's happy at Stoke. Maybe he is. But I would imagine a player of that quality generally has bigger ambitions. But yeah, you're right. Look, Burnley have Nick Pope, Joe Hart, and Tom Heaton, but Tom Heaton has been their captain, and I think that's the only thing to probably hold us back from him. Wouldn't mind Nick Pope, but consistency is an issue with him. Definitely don't want their first choice keeper, who is Adam Legdan. That's the only thing.
What about Joe Hart then? Would that be off the table?
No, it's off the table. I don't think. Look, he's a talented goalkeeper, and he's not actually very old either. He's only 32, which means, you know, he's got years left in him. But I'm sure wages would be an issue. They have been in the past, haven't they? If past links are to be considered, I believe we were linked with him quite heavily before. But yeah, I don't want us to be spending, you know, ridiculous amounts of money on Joe Hart. I'd rather get somebody who can stay with us for another 10 years or so.
Hey, forget about Jed Steer and Oyan Neuland, who we've got, who are both first choice goalkeepers who have played in that number one spot for Villa for big stretches of the season.
Nyland's going to have to go out on loan, in my opinion. No way for the Premier League.
Would you keep Kalinic?
If we start the Premier League with Kalinic as our first choice goalkeeper, it would not be the worst thing in the world.
Do you really think so?
Well, look, he's a good goalkeeper. I think that we had issues with him in the Championship. Fair enough. Perhaps those nerves will have gone by the time he's in the Premier League. I mean, fundamentally, he's a good goalkeeper. He was very good with crosses. I think there was times, though, he just dropped some clangers. And I think that the thing is, these clangers that happen from goalkeepers, I don't think you can necessarily put it down to them being fundamentally bad, especially when he's played for so many big clubs in the past and done so well in the past. I just think that maybe there's something not quite right with him, sort of mentally, in terms of was he really happy at Villa? That I don't know. But if all of that kind of comes together, then perhaps he's going to be fine, especially with a little bit of coaching.
But it seems that Villa do actually want rid of him, because he was linked with a move to Nantes of France, and it was believed that we would get a player in exchange, but that move seems to have kind of gone off the boil. There's been no news about it for quite a while now, about a week or so. But it does seem like Kalinic is the goalkeeper linked most often with a move away. Of course, with Ole Neuland only just coming back off a major injury, it seems like Kalinic will be the one out the door. I guess that's about it for today then. There's probably a few things to speak about that we probably didn't get to, but we can save them. There is the big issue, of course, of the new kits. They've, of course, been leaked. All three of them were leaked.
Yeah.
Two more were officially leaked. Then one was officially revealed, and that is the home shirt, which we'll be speaking about today. What did you make of the home shirt? Then, of course, Tyrone Mings revealed it. It's the Kappa shirt. It's claret and blue. The blue sleeves do come back. What do you make of it? Villa's first Premier League shirt in a while. Kappa?
Look, I think it's a bit boring. Do you think? I'm not going to lie. I think it's a bit boring, right? But I will give this... I will be fair. I think it's a little bit boring in the sense that I don't think it was very difficult to design, although I do like the seaming on it. And I do like the Kappa logo on either sleeve. That does look nice. I would have liked to have seen Kappa do the classic thing with, you know, multiple Kappa logos down the arm. Perhaps that would have been something that would have been considered. I don't know. They don't tend to do it much these days. But having said that, I get why they've made the kit the way it is. It's a straight up classic Villa kit. It is just claret body, blue sleeves, yellow highlights. And if it's our first season back in the Premier League, if it's our big return, I get why we've just kind of kept it true to our DNA, I guess. I'm fine with it. I just want to see something more imaginative next season.
My initial thought was, oh, that's a Burnley kit. Oh, it looks like West Ham. Then I thought, hang on, Burnley and West Ham look like us. It's not the other way around. We invented this kit. We made claret and blue popular. Like, we were the first team.
Yeah, of course.
So this is a Villa kit. It's not a Burnley kit. It's not a West Ham kit. This is a Villa kit. This is the original claret and blue. Everyone else is copying it. So I'm reveling in it. At first, I thought it was a bit boring. Then I thought, what really can you do with a Villa kit after the Luke one? Because the Luke one was all claret. You can't really have all claret 2 years in a row. But it's a good first effort. I think in future, they'll be having fan feedback. So there'll probably be a vote for one of the kits probably next season, or if the season after, if the designs aren't formalised. But the away kit, mate, that's the interesting one. That's a sky blue one with the kind of white piping down, but faintly down it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I've seen like a real one yet. It's just designs, isn't it, at the moment, right?
Those designs are pretty bang on.
Right. There was that leaked photo, wasn't there, of people carrying a flag?
Yeah.
Wasn't there? Can't see it very clearly.
Have you seen the green one? The third one?
I mean, the away kit's fairly boring, to be honest. But the green one... If that one's real, green with black sleeves, that's my kit for the season. That's the one I'll get.
I was thinking that's a Danny Riser shirt. Absolutely. I like the away one. I haven't had an away one in a while, so I want two of them, and I think one will definitely be the green one, and I'll have to fight it out between the home and away. But actually, to end the show, I've actually got a bit of funny breaking news for you. I mean, it's not Villa... Well, it is Villa related. But Pontus Janssen has just been sold by Leeds United to Brentford for £5 million.
What on earth? $5 million.
Basically, the story goes that the club weren't happy with him trying to demand a move to the Premier League. They weren't happy with his antics against Aston Villa. Marcelo Bielsa doesn't like him, so he's been completely sacked off, much to the anger of Leeds fans, who are a bit... They don't really know why Leeds would do that, especially after they rejected £15 million for him last summer.
Oh my God. That is bad.
That is really Leeds United, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's extremely Leeds United. But yeah, I mean, what better note to end on than that? A good laugh. That's what happens when you remain in the Championship, I guess. We'll probably see them next season.
I can't say I feel sorry for him after what he tried to pull.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't really stink of bad attitude, though. It just stinks of a player who really just wants to win every single game. And that's not bad. And I think Leeds have said that's a bad attitude to have. He clearly cared for the club.
He's consistently been so good in the Championship. I know some people say that he makes errors or whatever, but I think he's a defender with Premier League quantities, or at least he should be at a bigger club. But fair enough, I guess. Brentford, well done on signing him. It's a good signal of intent, I think, for them. So best of luck to them next season.
What better way to end it on, Danny? That is the transfer window updated. I guess we'll be hoping for more moves this week. Bit of a short week for them to do it, though. We're recording on a Monday, so they've got 4 more days to get stuff done before the weekend. The season is drawing closer. There is only a week or 10 or so days until they fly out to Minnesota to start that preseason against Minnesota United. So it's a short window to get some business done.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Remember, this window closes before the Premier League starts. So, as you say, we've got to start moving quickly. And if we're all the way over in America, I'm not sure how quickly we can do business. But I'm sure Pitark and whatnot will be sorting that out.
Next 10 days will be massive. Then we'll see if some moves are done, and we'll be catching up on the weekend, hopefully, with some news of some new players coming in. I'm James Rushton. That's Danny Risley. It's been the Hulkcast. We'll see you soon. Goodbye.